Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, July 6, 2020. Coming up this hour,
global equities surge with stocks in China leading gains.
Warren Buffett is back in the deal business, making a big bet on natural gas.
A surge in coronavirus cases fails to sap sentiment despite the biggest one-day infection count ever.
Phase 3 of reopening starts today in New York City, plus the FDA chief says it's too early to tell if Florida's Republican National Convention will be safe from COVID-19. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. An update on Yankee pitcher Masahiro Tanaka. The Rangers and Islanders playoff games will be in Toronto.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking advisory and accounting firm helping clients to be in a position of strength in the new reality of business. Learn about their innovative solutions by visiting Withum.com.
And U.S. futures are following stocks in Europe and Asia higher. 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 35 points. Dow futures up 336. And NASDAQ futures up 124. The DAX in Germany is up 1.5%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 0.68%. And the yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 19 cents at $40.84 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.40 at $17.86.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1290 against the dollar. The yen 107.57. And this data check brought to you by SEI. Crisis bring out the best in people, character, community, partnership, together as one. SEI, go to SEIC.com/IMS. Nathan.
Karen, we're coming off the biggest one-day increase in global coronavirus infections, and U.S. cases continue to surge with a pace above last week's average. California, Florida, Arizona, and Texas continue to see increases. Lena Hidalgo is chief executive of Harris County, Texas.
At this point, our hospitals here in Harris County, Houston, and 33 other cities, they are crossing, they're into surge capacities.
Hidalgo is calling for more restrictions to limit the spread of the virus, but says the state government has blocked local officials from taking appropriate measures.
In Arizona, Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego blames the surge on an early push to reopen. She spoke on ABC's This Week, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
We opened way too early in Arizona. We were one of the last states to go to stay at home and one of the first to reemerge.
Like officials in Houston, the Phoenix mayor says state government is limiting the ability of local officials to impose restrictions.
We opened way too early in Arizona. We were one of the last states to go to stay at home and one of the first to reemerge.
And the surge could put local tourism at risk in states across the South. TripAdvisor CEO Stephen Coffer is seeing travelers shun southern vacations for areas with lower infection rates. He spoke on Face the Nation from CBS, heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio.
You look at the top searches, and I think 5 or 6 of the top 10 a couple of weeks ago were all wonderful southern beaches, Texas, Arizona, Florida, great places to go, but that switched. Everyone's moving essentially up north away from all these hot spots.
Cases in northern states have seen infections stabilize. Today, New York City enters phase 3 of its reopenings. Phase 3 also begins today in Massachusetts.
Well, despite rising infections, the Trump administration remains bullish on the economy. Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia says the recovery is going better than expected and more stimulus could further boost growth. He appeared on Fox News Sunday, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
There will be talk as we get deeper into the month about possible additional measures, but I am optimistic, as I know the president is, about how we're reopening, the success we're having right now, rebuilding that really extraordinary economy that we had through February until the virus came.
Goldman Sachs, however, doesn't share that sentiment. Economists at the firm are lowering estimates for GDP this quarter. Goldman predicts 25% growth for the third quarter. That's down from 33%.
Coronavirus cases are climbing and GDP forecasts are falling, but stocks are still on the rise. U.S. futures and European equities are gaining after a strong showing in Asia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with more on the Asian session. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The CSI 300 gained 5.7% on the close, its biggest one-day jump since February last year, to hold at June 2015 highs. The Shanghai Composite had its biggest rally in 5 years to hold at February 2018 highs, up by 5.7%. Brokerages led the gains in China, with enthusiasm also sparked by a front-page editorial from the nation's state media that said fostering a healthy bull market after the pandemic is more important to the economy than ever. Hong Kong stocks also joined the rally set for a bull market, while gains were more muted in Japan and South Korea. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Juliet. European equities are also gaining. The Stock 600 is up 1.25%. U.S. futures are higher by 1.1%. And Warren Buffett is getting back in the deal business. Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is buying all of Dominion Energy's gas pipeline and storage assets. Here with more on the acquisition is Bloomberg's Catherine Chiglinski.
The deal really underscores just how big Berkshire is going to be in the energy sector after this. These operations are really going to spread kind of their hold in the natural gas transmission side of things. And it really underscores how Buffett is willing to now finally pounce. I mean, he took a really cautious approach at his annual meeting in May, warning people that we probably haven't seen the worst case possibilities with this pandemic. So I think this deal and the size of it really underscores that Buffett is actually willing to put some of that money to work.
Berkshire's buying Dominion's assets for $4 billion. It's also assuming more than $5 billion in debt. As a result of the deal, Dominion and Duke Energy are killing plans for a controversial gas pipeline along the East Coast.
Uber is also making deals. Sources tell us the ride-hailing company has agreed to acquire Postmates for $2.6 billion. The takeover would help Uber gain ground against DoorDash, the market leader in U.S. food delivery. The acquisition could be announced as soon as today.
And we're seeing strong gains for some big names in early trading. Shares of Uber are up 6% after word of that deal. Tesla's higher by 6%. American Airlines, Delta, United, and Boeing are up more than 3%. Norwegian Cruise Lines, Carnival, and Royal Caribbean are higher by at least 4%, and Dominion Energy is up 13% after news of that deal with Berkshire Hathaway. S&P futures are higher by 32 points. Dow futures up 310. NASDAQ futures a gain of 117 points. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. At 5:07 on Wall Street, Michael Barr is back with more on what's going on around the world. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Phase 3 of reopening from the pandemic is scheduled to begin today in New York City. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo urged people in a tweet to wear a mask, social distance, and be smart. Cuomo says, though, indoor dining will remain closed. However, some restaurants are getting more creative and are expanding their outdoor dining. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says there should be a national mask requirement during the virus. Murphy spoke on NBC's Meet the Press.
It's become almost not even debatable. Certainly when you're going out and absolutely indoors. As I mentioned, this virus is a lot more lethal inside than outside. But if you're leaving your house, put on a mask. I think it ought to be a national requirement.
Meet the Press can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg. Broadway star Nick Cordero has lost his long battle to COVID-19. The Tony nominee was just 41. FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn said it's too early to tell if it's safe to host part of the Republican National Convention next month in Florida, where coronavirus cases have been surging. It originally scheduled to be held in Charlotte, North Carolina. But Hahn, on CNN's State of the Union, also commented on President Trump saying that 99% of coronavirus cases in the U.S. were totally harmless.
I'm not going to get into who's right and who's wrong. What I'm going to say, Dana, is what I've said before, which is that it's a serious problem that we have. We've seen this surge in cases. We must do something to stem the tide, and we have this in our power to do it by following the guidance from the White House Task Force and the CDC.
Critics say the president's comments were misleading. India's coronavirus epidemic became the third biggest in the world behind the U.S. and Brazil. Infections continue to spread elsewhere as the Philippines added the most cases. Prosecutors have told a judge they'd like to schedule a Friday court appearance for Jeffrey Epstein's associate on charges she helped him recruit women to sexually abuse. British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell was arrested Thursday. She has been detained without bail after agreeing to be moved to New York.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan?
Thank you, Michael. It is 5:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Nathan, the Yankees were holding their collective breaths on Saturday when Masahiro Tanaka took that Giancarlo Stanton line drive off his head. But good news yesterday for manager Aaron Boone.
He had concussion-like symptoms originally before leaving for the hospital that have since dissipated. He went through a battery of tests at the hospital. Everything checked out well. They had a CT scan. It's negative.
Tanaka, after being released from New York Presbyterian Hospital, even showed up yesterday at the stadium and said to be in good spirits. But James Paxton and Jordan Montgomery both used the L-shaped fence in front of them when they pitched after Tanaka. Yanks will have an intra-squad game today with Jay Happ on the mound. David Price now a Dodger after his trade from Boston. He's the biggest named player to choose not to play when MLB starts its shortened season a few weeks. Price walking away from almost $12 million in a 60-game season, he would have made only about 12 starts. Cleveland manager Terry Francona says it is time for a name change. They have been the Indians since 1915. The Washington Redskins appear about to change their name. Their new coach, Ron Rivera, said to be talking to team owner Dan Snyder about possible new names. The Atlanta Braves say they have no plans to change. The Rangers and Islanders now finally know where they are headed for the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Eastern Conference games will be in Toronto, the West games in Edmonton. 26-year-old American Bryson DeChambeau just put on 40 pounds, saw it pay off with an impressive PGA win at the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit. Long-hitting DeChambeau shot 23 under par and won by three shots. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. Now our weekly look at what would have been in sports if not for the pandemic. The Subway Series leads the way. The Mets and Yankees would have played each other tomorrow for the first time this season in the Bronx. Other rivalry games would have included Cubs, White Sox, A's, Giants, and Dodgers, Angels. And after the traditional middle Sunday off, Wimbledon would have resumed today with all 16 men's and women's singles matches in the fourth round. The next major tournament is the U.S. Open on August 31st. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stock markets are starting the week higher after China's influential state media stoked bullish enthusiasm. The dollar is falling for a fifth day, and treasuries are dipping. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 31 points, Dow futures up 307, NASDAQ futures up 118, the DAX in Germany's up 1.3%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32nds, yield 0.68%, the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33% or 14 cents at $40.80 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $3.70 at $17.86.30 an ounce. The euro at 1.1284 against the dollar, the yen at 107.56. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. We are coming off the biggest one-day increase in global coronavirus infections. U.S. cases continue to surge. The pace above last week's average. California, Florida, Arizona, and Texas continue to see increases. India's coronavirus epidemic became the third biggest in the world, surpassing Russia. FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn said it is too early to tell if it's safe to host part of the Republican National Convention next month in Florida, where coronavirus cases have been surging. It was moved from Charlotte, North Carolina, because of virus concerns from the state's Democratic governor. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has agreed to meet tomorrow with leaders of the NAACP, the Anti-Defamation League, and Color of Change to discuss combating racism and discrimination. They will also talk about voter suppression after Facebook received civil rights complaints. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And Michael Hewson joins us as we come back from the long holiday weekend, Chief Market Analyst at CMC Markets. Good, as always, to talk with you, Michael. And it seems like this has been the story for some time, hasn't it, that coronavirus cases continue to surge, and so does the equity market. Obviously, we got that news from China, positive editorial from the Chinese state-run media. Is that what's driving this? Is this something that we could see having a sustainable impact on equity markets?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit cautious about this. I think there's a widespread thought process going on amongst investors that fiscal authorities, ultimately governments, are likely to take a continued proactive response to any continued rise in coronavirus cases. Later this week, the Europeans are meeting to discuss the pandemic recovery program. Hopefully they're going to get some sort of agreement by July. Personally, I put the odds of that as being very, very remote. There's also the prospect that we could get another US fiscal stimulus as well, particularly given that we are seeing these rises in coronavirus cases. I think it's probably more or less inevitable that we'll get one before the US presidential election. And ultimately, the economic data is continuing to improve. So you've got two factors, I think, helping drive this equity market higher. Of course, whether or not that's sustainable is a completely different question.
Right. Although I was curious whether you think that the continued improvement that we are seeing in the economic data could lead policymakers to think about putting the brakes on a little bit on further fiscal stimulus.
You could certainly make that argument. Certainly, I think Thursday's payrolls number was positive, but you've also got to remember that that payrolls number in particular only covers the first 2 weeks of June. It doesn't cover the last 2 weeks of June, and the potential for an awful lot of this rebound that we've seen in the services sector to suddenly find that they get refurloughed as a result of either a delay to the reopening or a renewed lockdown. And certainly, if you look at the Sun Belt of the United States, I think there is certainly a risk that could well happen. So I think before people get too carried away about the improvement in the economic data in the US, let's not forget that 21 million people lost their jobs since February. Only 7 million of those people have actually returned to the workforce.
What's the risk that further fiscal stimulus and continued liquidity on the monetary policy side leads to asset bubbles for this market?
I think we're way beyond that. If you want my honest opinion, and given what Chairman Powell said in his recent comments, I don't think he's really concerned about asset prices. In fact, he actually said that he wasn't convinced. It's not the Fed's job to monitor asset prices. It's the Fed's job to support the economy. So whether or not you're worried about an asset bubble, I think, is neither here nor there. I think certainly as far as US markets are concerned, we're already in one. The big question is whether or not it's sustainable. And at the moment, you don't really want to stand in front of a runaway train. That being said, we still need to take out the previous highs on the S&P 500, as well as the DAX and the Euro Stoxx 50, and we haven't as yet done that. At the moment, we still remain in a fairly choppy range.
What are your expectations as we get closer to the kickoff of earnings season in the next week or so? Does that bring equities closer to sustainable valuations?
I think that's going to be very, very important in the wider scheme of things. Obviously, next week we have the start of U.S. bank earnings season. Given the fact that we've seen the results of the recent stress tests and the dividend caps and what have you, the fact that these U.S. banks set aside $25 billion in worth of provisions for bad debts, for me, it's going to be very, very important what the type of signposting that these U.S. banks given with respect to further provision for bad debts going forward. And I think that will be key in determining whether or not this current rally is sustainable or whether or not we get a snapback.
All right, Michael Hewson, thank you as always for your insights. Really appreciate it. Michael Hewson is Chief Market Analyst at CMC Markets. Definitely risk on this morning as we get set to start the new week here with S&P futures higher by 32 points, a gain of 1%. Dow futures up 315 points, and NASDAQ futures are higher by 118 points. Stock 600 up 1.25%. The 10-year in the U.S. is down 4/32. Yield on a 10-year note, 0.68%. Two-year Treasury yield, 0.15%. Stay with us. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest Checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit them anytime at mynycb.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Global stocks are rallying despite the biggest one-day increase in global coronavirus infections. U.S. cases continue to surge in California, Florida, Arizona, and Texas, where Harris County Chief Executive Lena Hidalgo is asking the state for help.
As long as we're doing as little as possible and hoping for the best, we're always going to be chasing this thing. We're always going to be behind, and the virus will always outrun us.
Hidalgo is calling for more restrictions to limit the spread of the virus, but says the state has blocked officials from taking appropriate measures. Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego paints a similar picture. She's asking the federal government for help. She spoke on ABC's This Week, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
We've asked FEMA if they could come and do community-based testing here. We were told they're moving away from that, which feels like they're declaring victory while we're still in crisis mode.
Meantime, the White House is touting the economic recovery. And June jobs report, Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia appeared on Fox News Sunday, also heard on Bloomberg Radio.
We saw really big gains in manufacturing, we saw gains in construction, and we saw gains across really nearly all demographic groups. It was a terrific month. But yes, we have new cases. We have to keep an eye on that. I believe that we can continue to reopen our workplaces safely.
Goldman Sachs, however, is more tepid on the recovery over the weekend. Economists at the firm lowered estimates for GDP this quarter.
At the same time, we're getting a bullish sign from Warren Buffett, with the billionaire getting back in the deal business. Berkshire Hathaway is purchasing all of Dominion Energy's gas pipeline and storage assets for $4 billion. Berkshire will also assume more than $5 billion of debt. As a result of the deal, Dominion and Duke Energy are killing plans for a controversial gas pipeline along the East Coast.
Uber is also making deals. Sources tell us the company has agreed to acquire Postmates for $2.6 billion. The takeover would help Uber gain ground against DoorDash, the market leader in U.S. food delivery. The acquisition could be announced as soon as today. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures up 33 points, Dow futures up 322, NASDAQ futures up 116, the 10-year Treasury down 4/32, the yield 0.68%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.3% or 14 cents at $40.79 a barrel. The euro, 1.1287 against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. Now let's get more of what's happening around the world. Here's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Phase 3 of reopening from the pandemic is scheduled to begin today in New York City. It means nail salons and spas can reopen with precautions. Tennis courts can also reopen. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo urged people in a tweet to wear a mask, social distance, and be smart. Cuomo says, though, indoor dining will remain closed. Beaches are continuing social distancing. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says he'd like to see a national strategy on the coronavirus, including a mask requirement. Murphy on NBC's Meet the Press says the state is already seeing spikes as a result of the long Independence Day weekend.
We cannot afford to go through hell again. We need a national strategy, I think, right now, and masking has got to be at the core of that.
Meet the Press can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg. FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn said it is too early to tell if it's safe to host part of the Republican National Convention next month in Florida, where coronavirus cases have been surging. It was originally scheduled to be held in Charlotte, North Carolina, but Democratic Governor Roy Cooper had safety concerns for a full-out convention. Hahn was also pressed about President Trump's claim, without evidence, that 99% of coronavirus cases are totally harmless.
Any case we don't want to have in this country. This is a very rapidly moving epidemic, a rapidly moving pandemic, and any death, any case is tragic.
Hahn spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. At least six people were killed and dozens were hurt in a rash of shootings in New York borough Sunday. Two NYPD officers also suffered minor injuries in the Bronx and Brooklyn. In Atlanta, armed protesters had taken over an area near the burned-out Wendy's where Rayshard Brooks was killed by a police officer weeks ago, and now an 8-year-old girl is dead. Police say Sakoria Turner was in the car her mom was driving and tried to pull into a parking lot, but they were stopped by armed individuals. Shots were fired on the car, and Turner was shot and killed. Atlanta's Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms.
I want to see the same anger and outrage. I want us to see it on behalf of Sequoia and all the other people and children who are getting shot in our streets.
The child's father told a local TV station, they say Black Lives Matter. You killed your own this time. You killed a child. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 5:36 on Wall Street, time for the Burton Accountants and Advisors Sports Report with John Stanshire.
All right, Nathan, the Yankees hit hard by injuries last season and in spring training, and on opening day of their summer camp, Masahiro Tanaka got drilled in the head by a giant Carlos Stanton line drive. But the news on Tanaka is good. A mild concussion, released from the hospital. He made a surprise appearance at the stadium yesterday. Aaron Boone says they dodged a bullet. Meanwhile, Washington Nationals reliever Sean Doolittle questions why they're playing.
We're trying to bring baseball back during a pandemic that's killed 130,000 people. We're way worse off as a country than where we were in March when we shut this thing down. And like, look at where other developed countries are in their response to this. We haven't done any of the things that other countries have done to bring sports back.
Doolittle is with his team now, but admits he's considered opting out. Rangers and Islanders finally know where they are headed. Toronto, the NHL took a look at the coronavirus situation in the U.S., decided to stick with north of the border. So the Eastern Conference games will be in Toronto, the West in Edmonton. Training camps to officially open in team cities in 1 week. And then July 25th or 6th, it's off to the hub cities with games to be played, Stanley Cup playoff games, starting August 1st. The Nets, one of several NBA teams to close their practice facility. They were hit by the virus back in March. And again recently, Wilson Chandler and DeAndre Jordan are not going to play. Spencer Dinwiddie, not sure he's got the virus. Garrett Temple says he's considered not playing. He admits to nerves as they get ready to go to Orlando on Thursday. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Citigroup is hiring up to 100 coders every week. Financial News reports the bank is pushing ahead with plans to electrify its markets business and investment bank, even as the coronavirus crisis has derailed recruitment. The investment bank's reportedly adding about 2,500 coders this year. New Yorkers who make their way to Long Island's East End haven't left the city's restaurants behind. A number of the city's most popular eateries have opened or are running establishments this season in the East End, according to Dow Jones. Others are doing regular deliveries all the way from Manhattan. New Jersey initial unemployment claims fell by 15% last week, according to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. But almost 28,000 new unemployment claims were filed, bringing to 1.3 million the number of claims since the start of coronavirus-related shutdowns back in March. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thank you, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Jeff Pellinger, and on WIOD in Miami, I'm reporting on COVID-19 contributing to a growing food scarcity problem in South Florida.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston as big oil stumbles, Total manages to stay on its feet.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on a £1.6 billion promise by the Chancellor to support the entertainment and arts recovery after the pandemic.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for KCBS in San Francisco, I'm talking about Uber agreeing to acquire Postmates in an all-stock takeover.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford's China Ventures report year-on-year sales growth for the month of June.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Banks are giving up their stronghold on London offices, and it's not just because of the pandemic. Barclays may ditch its investment bank headquarters there. Credit Suisse is getting rid of 9 floors of office space. And Morgan Stanley's reviewing its entire London footprint capital. Thousands of job cuts expected to follow what is forecast to be the worst recession in 3 centuries. And shares of Overstock.com, which have surged 1,100% from their March low, are up another 10% in early trading. D.A. Davidson's doubled its price target to $66 for the e-commerce company. It's 5:40 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is online now. It's the heist issue, including the empty frames that remain the art world's biggest mystery. Terminal customers can receive a complimentary subscription at MAG Go and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly right here on Bloomberg Radio, or watch it on YouTube weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. Wall Street time. Get global business, finance, and tech news on your TV, computer, or mobile device. Just visit YouTube.com and search Bloomberg Global News. S&P futures higher by 34 points. Dow futures up 333. NASDAQ futures higher by 120 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly to mostly sunny today. Chance for a late afternoon shower or storm, going up to 95 degrees. We'll have scattered showers and storms tomorrow with a high in the mid-80s. Right now, 75 degrees in New York.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures rising this morning. S&P futures up 36 points. Dow futures up 346. And NASDAQ futures up 123. The DAX in Germany is up 1.7%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32nds. Yield 0.68%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.4% or 16 cents at $40.81 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $5.50 at $17.84.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1287 against the dollar. The yen 107.58. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, we're coming off the biggest one-day increase in global coronavirus infections. U.S. cases continue to surge with a pace above last week's average. California, Florida, Arizona, and Texas continue to see increases. India's coronavirus epidemic became the third biggest in the world, surpassing Russia. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 5:48 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's get more now on the surge we're seeing in coronavirus, particularly in the U.S. Dr. Amish Adalja is with us, professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Biggest one-day surge for the global pandemic yet, Dr. Adalja, and the U.S. has been reporting more than 50,000 new cases a day for the last several days. This comes down to more than just wider testing, right?
Exactly. This is not just wider testing. We are doing more testing than we have before. Over maybe 700,000 tests in a day are being done on certain days. But you have to look at the percent positivity of tests. And in places where that is rising, even as tests are rising, that tells you that the spread of the virus is outpacing the rising in our test capacity. So this tells you that the outbreak is accelerating in those areas. So it can't be just blamed on testing. This is something that's really a phenomenon of people spreading this more efficiently than they had in the past.
What do you think is behind that spread? Is it just a lack of social distancing? There has been some reporting that many scientists are growing increasingly concerned that the virus could be airborne at this point.
You have to remember that this virus is going to thrive on any kind of social interaction. And what we're seeing in many states, even states that have relatively less opening versus completely open states in terms of their economy, is that cases are going up. And this is something that has to do with people moving around, interacting with each other, and allowing that virus the opportunity. There has been some reports about airborne transmission, and I think this is kind of becoming more of a technical matter. We know that people transmit this when they're in close contact with each other within 6 feet or so for about 10 to 15 minutes. We're not seeing transmission the way we do with measles, where somebody has it, gets off an elevator, and somebody gets on the elevator half an hour later and gets infected. So we don't think that it's suspended in the air in that same manner, although you'll find some aerobiologists that might show some data showing that you can detect it. But do we epidemiologically think that's a main route of transmission? That's not the case. It's likely close contact required to do it, and we're seeing a lot of close contact all over the country right now.
And in response to that, we're seeing a number of states, particularly the hot spots, beginning to dial back their reopenings somewhat, or at least put them on pause. Is that going to be enough to get a handle on the kind of surge we're seeing?
Hopefully it will be. We know that now we have, because we have enough testing, because we've done some elements of contact tracing in many places, we have a better idea of how this is spreading in terms of what activities are more likely to do it. And that's why you're seeing places like Texas, places like Florida, looking at bars, because that seems to be one route of infection that seems to be prevalent in all of these case contact histories. So that's why you're seeing targeted public health interventions. In generally, targeted public health interventions focused on the epidemiology are much better than blanket types of orders. It was only because there was basically no intelligence about what was going on with this virus. Nobody knew who was infected and who wasn't early on in March and April, why you saw these economic shutdowns and stay-at-home orders. Hopefully that won't be necessary in the future, because we know how damaging that can be, and we want to be targeted and precise. It's just that we always run the risk of driving these things underground, and if bars are closed, or people going to people's houses and drinking. So it may take some time to see the full impact of this, but that's the idea, is that we could do these targeted, epidemiologically driven interventions in the future.
So you don't see the need then for a nationwide mask mandate or some other sort of blanket intervention?
Well, no, I don't see the need for a blanket shutdown order in a given state, or for every business, including, you know, house painters. They're not really contributing to the spread. But when it comes to face coverings, I do think that there is starting to be some data that face shields and masks in certain contexts are what will prevent people from spreading it. And I think that has to do with the fact that there are people out there clearly that are sick, that have mild symptoms that they're not attributing to the coronavirus. And those individuals may be spreading it or not even noticing their symptoms. And that's one of the issues. The fact that the complicating factor is if all this transmission is occurring in bars, that's not where people are going to wear masks. So we may have to come up with innovative solutions if we're going to attack this problem in bars. And I've seen, for example, in Japan, that they require face shields to be worn and people to drink out of a straw. That may be something that we could think about doing in places where bars are not closed and are still driving the epidemiology. But it's going to take a lot of fine-tuning, and this is going to be the new normal, really attacking these hot spots and the activities that are driving them.
Well, they have about 30 seconds left here. Where do you see us in the race for an effective therapeutic or vaccine? Do you think it happens by the end of the year?
A vaccine by the end of the year would be very optimistic. It's in the realm of possibility, and we are doing great things with Operation Warp Speed, as well as the Gates Foundation building factories, and we're already in phase 3 clinical trials with some vaccines, and we know that the Chinese military already approved a vaccine for use in its military. So I think we are breaking records, but I don't think you can imagine having enough vaccine for the entire country or even significant amounts by the end of the year. I think we have to be prepared to fight this virus without a vaccine for some period of time. People shouldn't get a false sense of security. Therapeutics, I do think we may have some earlier on. There are some monoclonal antibodies companies like Regeneron and Eli Lilly are developing, and we already have remdesivir. So that, I think we may have some more in the therapeutic toolbox before the end of the year. But a vaccine is really the only way we remove this as a threat, and I think that's still some time off.
Thanks for this, Dr. Amish Adalja, professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Karen?
Thanks, Nathan. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
EPA workers are now preparing to return to work next week. The plan to reopen the agency's offices was put off for 1 week. The EPA's biggest union says it has deep concerns about members' safety. YouTube is accused of only enforcing the copyrights of large owners such as Hollywood Studios and ignoring violations of copyrights held by smaller entities. Pennsylvania's top court ruled that state lawmakers cannot undo Governor Tom Wolf's emergency COVID-19 proclamation through a resolution.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now in other legal news, we examine the role emerging for Chief Justice John Roberts. A series of recent opinions shows Roberts as a swing vote, an ideological center of the Supreme Court. For more on his role on the bench, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Harold Krent, a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law.
He has been the deciding vote in all of the 5-4 votes this term. And he also has the power of being the chief. So beyond the swing vote, has any other Chief Justice in our history had that kind of power?
Given the composition of the court, he has exercised the power much more effectively than his predecessors had. Some people think Chief Justice Hughes, way back when, 75 years ago, during the FDR days, had somewhat similar power in terms of trying to keep the court independent, despite FDR's insistence that they change course. But of course, they finally did buckle under to FDR and did become much more giving or welcoming to the rise of the national government and its agencies. But you have to look that far back. I mean, certainly the numbers speak for themselves. We've never had a period of history, at least in the last probably 50, 75 years, where the Chief Justice has been able to dominate the court's rulings. I think 98% of the cases in the last 2 years or so, he's been in the majority, whether it's 5-4 or 6-3, and he's able to have that kind of incredible influence. It's really unique in our history, and we're seeing how it's played out. People say he's an incrementalist, which means he doesn't want to air out too many issues. He's been using the certiorari power to limit the type of controversial cases that go to the court.
If you consider Justices David Souter, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Anthony Kennedy, does how long you're on the court play a role in changing the way you view cases?
My own opinion is Chief Justice Roberts is not changing. Certainly, I think he has been somewhat disgusted with aspects of President Trump's rule, but I think he's fundamentally conservative. We're not going to see that kind of Souter switch or Justice Stevens' switch or even Justice White's switch. But yet again, I think the layer for Chief Justice Roberts is not that he's becoming more moderate, but that he really sees a crisis for the court, and he's in a unique role to do everything he can to try to help the respect and dignity of this august institution.
And that's Chicago Kent College of Law professor Harold Krentz speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures are up 36 points, Dow futures up 349, NASDAQ futures up 121. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.